You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
The dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. Welcome to my secret lair on Skull Crusher Mountain.
Help me, Obi-Wan.
We are here today with Sherry Antonetti.
Yes.
Monday of Divine Mercy Week. Yeah, I wish I could remember all the lyrics. Something about I made you a...
Where is this from, though? I mean,
it's a song by Jonathan Colton.
Okay.
whose stuff, by the way, he put it out there on Creative Commons. And so it's like this thing where you can, if you want, you can pay him $1 for the song. But he's like super relaxed about it. Did you already steal it? Well, that's all right. his contract. But people love him so much, they want him to do more stuff. So they pretty willingly just pay money, and his songs are hilarious. So he wrote one. He wrote one called "Blue Sunny Day," that is about it's about this suicidal vampire.
Oh, like, my gosh! Oh, gosh!
Depressed, and he apparently lives in like Southern California, and so like every day it's this beautiful blue sky, which he can't go out in because he'll die. And he's like always thinking about what happens if I just like fling the door open and let the daylight in, And finally, he said he thought for a while. Do I want to make this song about a vampire? Because he always writes these weird songs. And he thought, well, I'm not going to make this about a vampire. But, the more he worked on the lyrics, the more it was like, yeah, this is a vampire. But anyway, he also wrote a song called Skull Crusher Mountain about this. It's this mad scientist, who's talking to the girl who has been kidnapped and brought to his lair. And he's trying to impress her, so I made you a half pony, half monkey to please you.
Oh,
and he's, what's with all the screaming? Maybe I used too many monkeys. Isn't it enough that I
put a pony? I tried, yes.
Just to please you.
I have to know about. I don't know how I've lived this long without knowing.
Oh, yeah, Jonathan Colton. Yeah, you just go look. You can find all of his stuff on YouTube. He also has a terrific song called "Future Soon" about this guy who's like. He sounds like he's a kid in about eighth grade or something, but he's fantasizing about the future. And there's the girl in class that he likes who doesn't care about him. But it's going to be the future soon. And I won't always be this way when the things that make me weak and strange are engineered away. he's going to make himself a robot body and take over the world, and all this stuff. And then she'll be impressed with him and she'll like him.
I love it. I've never can't wait to look at this.
He's fantastic. And he turns up now and then on other things. He wrote, have you ever, there's a game called Portal. You ever heard of Portal?
I've heard of it, but I don't really know it.
So Portal is really great. So the conceit behind Portal is you're in this laboratory working for Aperture Science Industries, and you've basically been put in there by, whoever. You've been promised that if you can complete this series of puzzle problems, then there will be cake.
Okay.
And, as you go along, you know, more and more you're finding like the blasted corpses of previous players.
Oh, dear. Maybe cake is not enough.
they've scrawled in blood on the wall. They've scrawled, you know, the cake is alive. And anyway, the whole conceit of the thing is you got this special gun that you point it at the wall and it opens a portal, and then you point it at something else and it opens another portal. And if you go through the portal, then you pop out wherever the other portal is. And so your problem is to get through these increasingly deadly
evil things,
levels that you're trying to get past. You're trying to escape the robots that will kill you and the lasers that will fry you and all the other things. And it becomes more and more apparent that GLaDOS, the computer, the very sweet voiced computer, is just filled with glittering malice toward you and wants to destroy you at all costs. And so eventually the game becomes about finding a way to kill GLaDOS.
I can't do that, Dave.
So anyway, Jonathan Coulton wrote the closing theme to both Portal and Portal 2. They're both absolutely hilarious.
Oh, man. So, two fun things to look at.
I am a huge fan of Jonathan Coulton. Yes, he's.
I gathered.
he wrote a Christmas song called Merry Christmas from Chiron Beta Prime, where we're working in a mine for our robot overlords. Did I say overlords? I'm protectors. And it's all about this family that's like riding home from Chiron Beta Prime, talking about how they're looking forward to Christmas. And, you know, on every corner, there's a giant metal Santa Claus who watches over us with glowing red eyes. They carry weapons and they know if we've been bad or good. Not everyone, not everybody's good, but everyone tries.
Oh, gee. Oh my gosh! I'm looking at you at Google right now, googling Chiron Beta Prime, and just cracking up from just looking at it.
He's just a genius. Yeah, he does these amazing things, and I got to see him live a couple of years ago. John Hodgman, who is also hilarious, came to Seattle, and it was him and Jonathan Coulton, and then out in the audience, just sort of planted out in the audience, was half of They Might Be Giants.
Oh, I love They Might Be Giants. I completely love. Oh,
yeah. Well, one of the Johns was like here. So, you know, they had this rousing back and forth and then played some song. And anyway. A big fan of Jonathan Coulton.
So, okay. Yeah. How do we segue to Divine Mercy? I was going to ask you.
Sooner or later. I figured we'll go to break or something.
And then it will be a Divine Mercy that we have a break, and then we can talk about Divine Mercy.
I'm talking about Jonathan Coulton, you know? So.
Laughter is a mercy. There you go.
Yeah. So, did you have a good Divine Mercy?
We had a really lovely Divine Mercy. It was basically my son came in and spent the week for spring break. So it was the last day he was going to be here before going back to work. Okay. So we just really enjoyed our time as a family together. And that was really something we don't get to do very often, where we have eight of the 10. I'm like, yes, it's just somehow more fun with one more. And, you know, we did do the Divine Mercy Chaplet, okay. But, We really, it was more just we were spending the time together as a family.
Oh, I'm glad. So. It's kind of the timing. My one son has to work on Sundays, and my other son, my two oldest sons are out of the house, so they do whatever. But our third son has been singing in the choir for the local Latin Mass guys.
Oh, wow.
So, so he like just broke his back on Holy Week because it was just like wall to wall singing all Holy Week.
Marathons, yeah.
Ever, you know, on the vigil and so forth. And so yesterday he was off doing that. And so we're back to just me and Jan going to Mass again. For the time being, we are not with any of our kids at Mass. And so I got a friend, Indonesian guy named Johannes.
Nice name.
Yeah, who has this rich stentorian voice when he speaks. So anyway, he entered the church yesterday. And he really, really wanted me to be there. So we normally go to the 9 o'clock, but he was getting received at the noon Mass. So we went to the noon Mass at Blessed Sacrament, and they received four people into the church, Johannes among them. And so he wore the alb and everything. I gave him a copy of one of my books because you want to do something, you know. So anyway, they go down the line and they put the mic in their face and, you know, I believe and profess all that the Holy Catholic Church believes, teaches, and proclaims is revealed by God. That's yes. What you have to say. So, you know, Johannes was, I believe and profess.
Wow. Oh, man.
Resonating, booming voice throughout the sanctuary. So that was cool.
That is cool.
So he was received and
people to sign him up in order to be on the choir and be the cantor right now.
I don't know if he could sing or not. So anyway, he did that, and then he got confirmed. He's already been baptized, so all these guys had already been baptized.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah, it was great. So we'll talk a little bit more about that when we return. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. We're here today with Sherry Antonetti doing her swan song.
Curtsying for you all right now.
Yes. Talk about Sherry's swan song. On Connecting the Dot right after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
The Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are here today with Sherry Antonetti. We are here today for the last time with Sherry Antonetti. Just so you'll know, I'll be mentioning this over the course of the week, so people will all get the message. What's happening is we are going to be going, Breadbox Media is going to a podcast platform. So streaming will be going away at the end of this week.
Sorry, guys.
It's nothing to do with Sherry. It's nothing to do with any of my co-hosts. It's not really anything to do with me. minds that are to my mind as ours are to the beasts that perish have made decisions beyond my ken. So what we're going to do is this show will become it's already a podcast, by the way. You can find it on Podbean. But what we're going to do is all the shows on Breadbox will become podcasts. Streaming will go away, and you'll still be able to listen to the show. The show, however, will be simply found as a podcast. So you can go and listen to it any time of the day or night, anywhere in the world, as long as you have the ability to listen to podcasts. And that means if you're hooked up to the web, basically.
You can do it.
Yeah, you can do it. So we won't be doing the show will not be live anymore. And I will be doing my podcast once a week rather than five times a week. And so that will all start next week. Sherry will, I have no doubt, be back on the show as we figure out, you know, what we're doing. But since it is just once a week, probably what I'll be doing is I'll be having some of the old gang back, the co-hosts, but we'll also have guests, and sometimes I may solo, you know, so that I can monologue like a supervillain. Speaking of Jonathan Coulton, Jonathan Coulton also, speaking in addition to Skull Crusher Mountain, Jonathan Coulton also has a song called Nemesis, which is really great. And it's basically the nemesis of a hero, of a superhero, talking about how, you know, you wouldn't be anything without me. And so it's kind of this weird kind of creepy sort of love song about how, you know, we're made for each other, and you know, say you'll be my nemesis, you know. And so, yeah, anyway.
Oh, wow.
So I can monologue, you know, like a supervillain now and then.
Or occasionally invite your prior guest host on to We Could Be Your Nemesis.
Yeah. I can do all those things, you know. I can go, you know, put on. And the nice thing about a podcast is no commercials. And also, it can be of kind of any length. It doesn't have to be an hour. So I could just talk and talk. If I want to, for hours, if I feel like it. Do recordings of, there's a famous, by the way, I don't know if you know this story. One of the early moments in radio in the U.S. as radio stations were first getting set up, it was literally just, you know, if you could afford a transmitter and figure out a way to get the signal out, then you could have a radio station.
Kind of like the internet in its early stages when everybody had a blog.
Well, yeah, I mean, really, and that's what podcasting allows people to do again, is just, you know, you've got the technology, and so you could just start, you could just set up and do anything. So one of the earliest moments in radio was just this guy who had begun this radio station. Well, the problem with radio, of course, is that you have to have something to fill the airtime.
Right.
And so the guy was doing this broadcast, and he just ran out of stuff to talk about. And so finally he said, "Ladies and gentlemen, the sound of New York traffic." And he said, radio out, the microphone out the window, and just played the sounds of traffic on the street below for a while, because he just plumb run out of stuff to say.
Channeling John Cage and his early symphonies.
Now, one of the things I'd like to try is Five Pianos Drop from an Airplane. I think that would be a great, that's an actual John Cage composition. Did you know that?
I actually did know that.
Five Pianos Drop from an Airplane. So anyway, so that's what's happening here. But thought spend a little time talking about Divine Mercy. I went to, after Mass, we got invited to Vashon Island. Vashon Island is a little island out in the middle of Puget Sound, about 20 minutes away by ferry from Seattle. I think, I'm not sure, but are you familiar with Doonesbury, the cartoon Doonesbury?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think Mike Doonesbury lives on Vashon Island, or he may live on Bainbridge Island. I can't remember which, but that's where Gary Trudeau stuck him a few years ago. But Vashon Island, I've got a couple of friends who live over on Vashon Island.
Nice.
And Vashon Island, you can look this up on Google.
Okay.
Vashon Island has one of the stranger sort of weird things to see in America.
Okay.
It's called, and you can Google this, the bicycle tree. So there's a tree. I've been there. I will put up the picture of me next to the bicycle tree on my Facebook page later today, just to prove that I was there. So there's this tree on Vashon Island where some kid in like 1954 hung his bicycle on a branch and walked off and left it. And
oh my gosh,
and the tree just grew around the, it ate the bicycle. And so the bicycle is like part of the tree, one with the tree now. There's no way to get the bicycle out of the tree anymore because it's become one with the tree. The tree has completely eaten the thing. And it became this thing, right? So it's like this, it was like this tourist
thing. Go see the tree that had eaten the bicycle.
The tree that ate the bicycle. And so it's been there for, I don't know, 65 years now.
That is cool.
And somebody vandalized the bike a couple of years ago, which makes me mad. They took the wheels off or, you know, various other stuff. But I have a picture of me standing next to the bike when it was still in its, you know, intact, in its integrity. And
I've been to the beer can house in Houston.
Do tell. What is that?
The Beer Can House is a Houston landmark for those of you who do not know. Okay. And basically, you go, and the man has used it to make, he's used the the top rings and the beer cans to decorate his house. And it is covered, I mean, covered head to toe with beer tabs, like you would when you pop a beer.
Uh huh.
And basically, it is a piece of artwork now in Houston, the whole house. And it's called the Beer Can House. And the guy just thought it would be a good idea, and it was easier than painting. That's what he said. So all the cans have been crushed and linked together, or the lids. I mean, it's the whole house, the entire house is covered head to toe. You can't miss it.
That's a lot of beer, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, he is no longer the only one who drinks it. He did admit to that.
Well, that's a hopeful sign, at least.
Yes.
The guy would be dead. You know?
Yes. But it's actually a Houston landmark now. I mean, it really is. It's considered part of the art of the of Houston. Is the Beer Can House. So it's nowhere near. It kind of fits Houston in the same way the tree eating the bicycle fits Seattle.
Yes. Well, you know, there are bumper stickers on Vashon. I actually have a friend who has one. One of my friends that lives on Vashon that just says, "Keep Vashon weird." And that is, you know, that's very true. It's just it's its own place. You know, it's funny. Island life on Puget Sound is, it's just there's a different speed to it, a different pace to it. And when you
there's a different community life to places that are on the ocean. It just changes how you respond to all of life. I think, you know, Jimmy Buffett being an example, you know.
Yeah. We go up to the San Juans. Well, in about a month, we'll be going up there.
Nice.
San Juan Islands are this little cluster of islands south of Vancouver Island. Western Washington was produced by the collision of a number of small sort of hunks of crustal plate that all kind of rushed up from Baja, of all places. by rushed.
Yeah, rushed in a glacial term. Yes, okay.
Rushing in geologic terms is not what you would really call rushing. But anyway, they slammed into Western Washington some millions of years ago. And there's these sort of fractured, fragmented pieces that were also then covered with this immense glacier, which then receded. And the glacier dug out Puget Sound and then left behind these islands.
Yeah. I'm sure it's gorgeous. I still can't figure out how you people like swimming in places where it's so cold.
We just don't.
Okay.
That's for dumb adolescents.
Okay. I feel better.
On and say, "My, that looks cold." We're not going to do that. So we'll be back after this. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. And we're here today with Sherry Antonetti. We're talking about, well, all kinds of things, including Divine Mercy. And we'll be back right after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
back to Connecting the Dots. Your host, Mark Shea, and we are here today with Sherry Antonetti. We're talking a little bit. Well, we've covered a lot of ground already. We've addressed the Jonathan Colton issue.
Yes.
We moved on to the
high art and culture in the forms of the bicycle tree and the beer can house.
Beer can house. I can give you the complete history of the San Juan Islands if you want. This is cool. So the San Juan Islands, like I say, were made by this collision of a little tectonic plate that slammed into Western Washington. That's why we have two mountain ranges here, because the Olympics are one of them, and then the Cascades are the other. And it's all made by this big crunch up of all of this weird geography that is just kind of chaotic. And we actually found, which is a real rarity, the very first dinosaur bone ever found in Washington State was found on this dinky little island that's like kind of part of the San Juan Islands, but it's so small that nobody cares about it.
that's cool.
And well, there's like 700 islands in the San Juan Islands, but most of them are literally, they're like just these rocks that stick up out of the water that they have to put a flag on so a ship doesn't hit it.
Yeah, I was going to say, because you'd be navigating a bear, I would think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. So, but then there's like several big islands that actually qualify as islands. But
kind of, so the others are like Pluto. They're not really planets, but they're, you know, they're not really islands. They're very small rocks.
I saw some article the other day. Apparently, somebody was suggesting that maybe the Earth is also just an asteroid like Pluto. And somebody like tagged me with this thing that said, first they came for Pluto, and I said nothing because I was.
Oh, that's too good. That's.
So anyway, so the Salmon Islands, basically what happened was when they negotiated the 49th parallel as our border with Canada, the guys that were in charge of negotiating that border knew absolutely nothing about Puget Sound. So they just said, well, the border will just go down the middle of the channel. Well, there's like, what channel? So there's like a fairly
big
channel south of the San Juan Islands and another fairly big channel that you can fit a lot of ships through that goes north of the San Juan Islands. So the Brits all said, well, obviously they meant the channel south of the San Juan Islands, so we get the San Juan Islands. And the Americans said, no, they obviously meant the channel that goes north of the San Juan Islands, so we get the San Juan Islands. So the result of it was we wound up with an armed camp on the south end of San Juan Island, which is the biggest island in the San Juans. And the Brits put an armed camp on the north end of San Juan Island. And there was this sort of this tense standoff in the 1850s between the British Empire and the United States. And so the commander of the American camp in the 1850s was a guy named George Pickett.
Okay.
Pickett would go on to glory.
The Battle of Gettysburg. Pickett's charge on July 3rd.
Yes, he led Pickett's charge. Have you really?
I've
always wanted to go to the Gettysburg battlefield.
Well, July, it's magnificent. And if you ever get the chance, it's truly worth it. We've gone many, many times. And it happened on my birthday. So we did that for my birthday. Uh-huh. It was to walk Pickett's Charge. And when you walk it, you just can't believe that people kept going forward. You just can't fathom that kind of sturdiness against withering fire. They're just, And it's just, it's really, it's very worth it. And I honestly, growing up in the South, I'd always heard about the Civil War, but I grew up in Texas, so I didn't really see any of the Civil War battlefields. There's one Battle of Sabine Pass where a bunch of drunken Irishmen held off some Northern Yankee fleet, you know, frigates trying to come in.
No Irish.
Yes. And they were drunk. But the bottom line is that, you know, that's really what I know of the Civil War that happened in Texas. You know, more mm-hmm. you go in Texas history, you go visit the Alamo and the missions, you go visit Gallaudet, you go visit San Jacinto. You know, you walk around with a really cool flag that says "Come and take it" with the cannon on it. But you know, but you don't necessarily Civil War. And so going to Gettysburg, it was like finally the Civil War yeah. and what happened made sense. You could go to the big, little round top, big round top, all of it. It just totally worth going to.
Oh, I'd love to do that.
Yeah. So,
yeah, I really would. I went to Bull Run.
Uh-huh.
AKA Manassa.
Yeah. I've been to that.
Which is where the first battle of the Civil War was fought.
Yes. Been to Antietam.
I didn't get to Antietam. I could have done all of that because everything, you know, the thing about the Civil War yes. Is that like 90% of it seems to have been fought in Virginia.
Yeah. Yes, that's true.
And there's an awful lot of it that happened in Virginia, so it's easy to see. But I went to Bull Run, but that was it. And it, you know, you can. Yeah, you can see the layout of it, and you can see, you know, some of the places on the battlefield. There are houses there that I'm certain are in photographs that I've seen from Bull Run,
right?
From the Civil War. I mean, they're that old, you know. But I'm one of those guys that if I'm driving down the road and I see one of those signs that say, you know, historic marker, I'm the guy that will stop and read that while everybody else is like, can we get going? You know, a minute. I just want to read this thing. I want to know what happened here.
Yeah, no, I know. Well, we went to Vicksburg where you can see the inside of the USS Cairo, which is a Union ironclad gunboat.
Ah, okay.
And that's totally cool. My husband is the same way. He goes, we stop at every sign marker. And I almost point out we don't need to stop at every sign marker because he already knows what happened at every single right. place that we go to. You know,
yep.
You know,
when I was in D.C. Washington. A couple of years back, I had to go to Ford's Theater.
Yes.
That was just, when I was in eighth grade, I wrote a report on the assassination of Abraham Lincoln.
Uh-huh.
Making me one of those people that like knows far more about the assassination of Abraham Lincoln than any normal person should know.
You know? Okay. You're one of those kids.
So I know all of these things, you know. I know who George Atzerodt was. And Lewis Payne. I could tell you all of this other stuff about, because there were like a number of other people that were supposed to get killed that night who didn't get killed. And, you know, all these other things that happened, you know, it was a big thrill for me to like go to Ford's Theater. And at another point we went past, Mary Surratt's house, her son, John Surratt, she was hanged along with the rest of the conspirators, mostly because she was John Surratt's mother, who was a real conspirator.
Okay.
B, she was a Catholic, which was like, she's probably guilty. Let's just kill her just to be sure. And John Surratt actually fled the United States after the assassination and wound up, I'm not making this up, he wound up as a member of the Swiss Guard.
Okay.
And somebody took a picture of him in his Swiss Guard uniform, and then somebody in the States said, isn't that John Surratt, the guy who's suspected of conspiring to kill President Lincoln? I think that is. So they extradited him
from the Vatican
and brought him back. And I forget if they hanged him or put
funky
him in jail.
Funky Catholic trivia on connecting the dots. Yeah.
So that's why, by the way, after the Civil War, among other things, one of the anti-Catholic tropes that started floating around the United States in the 1860s and 70s was the Jesuit conspiracy to murder Lincoln. There was an actual Catholic involved in this, and he, to be fair, did wind up in Rome as a member of the Swiss Guard.
So naturally we can paint everybody with that cloth. Yeah, okay.
It's like, okay, you know, I could see why a bunch of wahoos in the United States would come to the conclusion. Well, and also, Rome had actually backed the South. After he was put in prison, Jefferson Davis received from Pope Pius IX a crown of thorns that the Pope himself had made with his own hands as a kind of a gift and a consolation for him while he basically spent, you know, endless years in prison after the war. So for all of those reasons, Americans came to the conclusion that, Rome was an enemy of true blue Americans and et cetera, et cetera. But, there's your, that's
your fascinating fact from Catholics.
Your Catholic dot for today.
Catholic trivia.
Catholic trivia. Yeah. Rome's reasons for backing the South are, it was basically Rome tended to back small agrarian versus large urban.
Yes.
That really seems to have been what was driving it. We'll be back after this. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea. And we are here today with Sherry Antonetti, just talking about all kinds of weird things.
Because it's fun.
And we'll be back.
It's what we do.
On Connecting the Dots, right after this.
If you enjoy listening to Mark Shea and all of his wonderful co-hosts here on Connecting the Dots, then consider becoming a friend of the show and provide your support today. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show. Thank you.
Dots, I am thy host, Mark Shea, and verily, I am here today with Sherry Antonetti.
Thank you, good sir.
So we're going to talk about divine mercy, but we keep getting distracted by all these other things because
it's fun to visit.
Fun to visit. So we did the divine mercy thing over on Vashon Island at St. John Vianney. Parish over on Vashon.
Okay.
And it's a beautiful place. They've got this lovely parish that's Vashon's very woodsy, and so the altar has this enormous open glass window instead of a stained glass window that just looks out on this gorgeous vista of forest, you know. And so you just feel like you're in this
the Cathedral of the Pines, so to speak.
Yeah, it's very like that. Yeah, so they just decided, you know what, God made all that. Well, I think that's good to look at while you're thinking about God. And so we did the Divine Mercy Chaplet. I must say that I am hopeless at 3 o'clock on a Saturday. Or a Saturday. I am just hopeless. Expecting me to sit down and say a repetitive prayer and not nod off is not a sane thing to expect.
Well, I had a friend, a good priest friend, who said, if you fell asleep, you're just as good as the apostles.
That's a cross. Yeah. Okay.
I was like, I
prefer to think of myself as being more like Saint Joseph. But
there you go.
Got all of his insights while he was asleep. So yeah. So we did that.
I like that too. That's good.
We did that. Yeah. So we said that. I gotta say that I just completely bombed out on the whole Divine Mercy devotion this year. It just didn't happen.
So, I found it to be something that I need sometimes, and when I need it, it is especially it's helpful. I definitely feel I draw strength from it. And like when my son was in the hospital, I couldn't get through the day unless I had said the Divine Mercy Chaplet in addition to the rosary. I mean, I was just a praying monster because I was frightened out of my mind. But, you know, I sometimes try to say it and I just can't quite. It's weird to say somehow the rosary is easier.
Uh-huh.
But somehow the rosary is easier because it lets me get deeper into the rhythm of saying the prayer. It feels too abrupt, almost like I'm speed dating God. and I don't mean to say that to be irreverent. I mean that in earnest. That sometimes it just feels I can't. You know, here's God's divine mercy. I made it short for you. You know?
Yeah.
And I'm going, wait a minute, don't you need me to do a few more laps, you know, a few more push-ups of prayer or something this easy? And so it's funny. I think that's part of it is that, you know, it's like when you, I don't know if you read Rebecca French's article about the hardest penance she ever received was to do nothing. And that drove her crazy.
How long do you do that for? Exactly.
Exactly. See, you know, she's starting to quantify it and qualify. And he's like, you know, he basically wanted her to rest in God's mercy, which if you do the Divine Mercy Chaplet, you really have to do in order to understand what you're doing, what you're praying. And I remember when I first heard about it, I kind of wrinkled up my nose. And then when I did it and I needed it, I found it to be terribly lovely. And I've read half of her diary, but it's many, many years of diary. So it's extent. It's like reading somebody's, if you started, you know, today and decided to read every one of your blog entries from the beginning of your entry of blogging to now. So it would take a while.
For me, all repetitive prayer requires motion to go with it, or I will conk out. It just always has that soporific effect on me. So I will say the rosary, if I'm taking a walk, that's typically when I do the rosary. So I as a diabetic, part of what I have to do is I need to put in a few miles every day.
Yes.
Went somewhere. So we have a really lovely woodsy kind of canyony spot that I'll take a walk. That's like a, I don't know, 3-4 mile loop from my nice house through that woods. Yeah. So it's long enough for me to say the rosary and actually put some thought into it. But if you sit me down in a comfy chair or in, for example, a warm sanctuary with a beautiful view of a
forest,
rainy forest, I will be out like a light. 5 minutes, there's nothing I can. And I believe me, I'm trying to stay away because it's embarrassing, right? It's
yes,
while everybody else is doing the Divine Mercy Chaplet. But so if a parish doesn't mind me like pacing back and forth in the back while everybody's praying, I'll do that.
Yeah, I have it on in the car when I'm driving back from picking up my kids. That's
no, I won't pray the rosary while I'm driving because it's dangerous. It knocks me out.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well,
yeah.
Fair enough.
If I'm walking, I'm fine. And then I can think about things or, you know, as usually happens with me, if I say a rosary, my mind invariably will wander. I actually thought up the premise for my novel while I was saying the rosary.
So there you go. Yes.
I'm just going to go ahead and take this as divine inspiration.
Yes. Yeah. I'm going to go with that. Yes. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what helps me to focus when I do the rosary, because I do struggle with that too. I'm naturally scatterbrained and caffeine doesn't help. And having 10 children probably doesn't help either with me focusing. But it just masked the fact that I'm a scatterbrain. My father taught me, and my brother reinforced it because he went and worked with the Jesuit Volunteer Corps, to do a petition with each Hail Mary. And
okay, yeah, I do that sometimes.
And by doing that, it helps me to stay focused on saying the prayer because I'm thinking not just about praying, but about praying for someone.
Right.
And so that works. But for the Divine Mercy Chaplet, again, it, as I said, it feels too fast to even add that in.
Yeah. I will, with the Divine Mercy Chaplet, I just kind of, I don't know, I just offer the general, you know, intercessions for mercy for people that I want to have mercy
Which that brings, you know? That brings up a big question that I was trying to tease with, and I didn't get to write this. But I was thinking about the idea of, you know, if you really contemplate divine mercy as being this ocean of mercy, which is available to anyone who seeks it, then you have to ask the question, who would you want not to seek it? And you ask it that way, not because you want someone not to seek it, but to recognize who it is that you don't love.
Like,
Who do you not want to meet in heaven?
Yeah.
And that's the real question that comes out of that. And then that's a way of kind of doing a little soul searching about what divine mercy is, because what it comes across quickly to me is that it's real quick that you can go from being, Lord, have mercy on me, I'm a sinner, to I'm really grateful I'm not like that person over there.
Yeah.
really, lightning fast.
I do something similar to that with confession. I used to, when I went to confession, I would like think of particular sins. So I'd go through like this, maybe like the seven deadly sins, or right. I'd go through the Ten Commandments and see which of them. And that's, you know, that's certainly one way to do an examination.
It's a good exercise.
A lot of times, though, I think for me, a personalist approach works better, which is to say, who am I angry at? Who did I hurt this week? Who did I, you know... When I attach a face to it, then it's easier for me to like go, well, that was a sin. I'm not sure like what species of sin it may have been. For me, it's usually anger. But I can say my relationship with that person is not what it ought to be. So I'm not sure which sin that is, maybe, but I do know that what I did to that person sucked. And so I'll bring that to confession.
The latest way that I had, by the way, this has been burned. I just want everyone to know if they hear this, but I had a little book and I wrote out all the sins that I could think of that I've done. It's been burned. It doesn't exist. You can't find it. So there. Okay.
It's burned into your memory.
It is too, yes. Okay. but it was advised to write out your sins, everything that you could think of from the beginning of time that you could think of, and in a sense to look for patterns of how you tended to what, so that you could to really, and if you could do this in front of the Blessed Sacrament, then you really could, you know, ask, please point out to me where I am weak. And it really was very strong. It was strong medicine, to be sure. Mm. But it was also healing, because I know that I, you know, had things that I hadn't even thought about, and I'm like, oh yeah. Mm. And that's what you, in a sense, want when you go to confession, is to have that kind of aha, kind of like Peter when he gets to the shore and there's that charcoal fire. Yeah. Like, oh boy. Yeah. You know? Yeah. You know, that kind of moment. And that's what mercy is about. It's about recognizing that we need this so much more than we ever think we do.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you, Cherry Antonetti, for your wonderful contributions to the show. As I say, I'm sure you will be back.
Thank you.
And God bless you and your family. Thank you so much for everything that you've done. We will be back tomorrow with Amy Christine Murphy. And we're going to be talking about her work in the consistent pro-life movement. Consistent.
Wonderful.
Movement. Yeah. Our producer today was Mr. Danny Head. We will be back tomorrow with Danny Head. And thank you guys for listening. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.